Edgar Allan Poe had a rapid rise to fame after his poem The Raven was published in a New York newspaper in January 1845. He became wildly famous, if remaining poor. Just over 4 years later, he was dead, and many of his contemporaries assumed any legacy he had would be fleeting. Yet more than 160 years later, Poe remains among the best-known American writers ever. Stephen Berry, a professor of history at the University of Georgia, discussed Poe during a talk on the University of Arkansas campus last month. During his visit, he talked to me about his upcoming book, Jingle Man, The Death and Times of Edgar Allan Poe. He told me that studying Poe...
What it meant to drink yourself to death in the grand age of temperance. Temperance was a reform movement of Poe's period that was, you know, more important, or at least had more card-carrying temperance advocates than you had abolitionists or anything else. So drinking yourself to death in that age was a really big deal. So at the time, that made Poe a sinner and a depraved soul and all of these other things. Now it makes him Jim Morrison.
Exactly. How well-known was Poe during his lifetime?
Very well-known. Once he published The Raven, I would argue that he's one of the most famous and then infamous poets in America. And I would argue that The Raven is one of the most famous poets in America. It was instantaneous sensation in 1845 when he published it. So by 1845, he's enormously famous. And by 1849, he's infamous and dead.
It's so dangerous to make these sort of comparisons, but you think of Amy Winehouse, mm-hmm. who in pop music had a similar trajectory,
right,
it seemed.
Right.
Was Poe's infamy known? Was his drinking known to the general public?
Yes and no. It wasn't known to the general public until the obituary that's published in 1849, but it's certainly known to all of his professional acquaintances. And so he's flaming out on a national stage. Mm-hmm. So he attains this fame in publishing The Raven, and so all eyes are on him and watch him as he does this to himself. And they have code for it, so he dies of inflammation of the brain or things like that, but they all know what that means. That means somebody died of alcoholism.
As you mentioned, it was in the grand age of temperance. So this was viewed, I take it on a national scale, as just a lost sort of soul.
That's right. And they didn't have the notion that this could be in your DNA,
right,
or that you needed help, or that it could be linked to depression and self-medicating depressives, which I think is certainly what Poe is. They had the idea that this was a conscious choice and to a degree an ungodly choice that you were making about your own body. So again, he's self-damned, and in an age that's very religious, that's a big deal.
So it was seen as purely bad behavior.
Yes, absolutely.
When he died in 1849, it seems like there was kind of an effort to say, well, he's now going to be confined to the dustbins of history because of that bad behavior.
Right.
And that's not what happened.
That's absolutely not what happened. And in some ways, his literary executor, who hated him, had a love-hate relationship with Poe, says worse and worse things about him as the ages go on. And he's really the only person who's even writing biography on Poe. So it wasn't just that he drank himself to death. He was a spouse abuser, and he was a drug addict and opium eater. And so he just piled on all of these charges to make Poe seem worse and worse and more ungodly. But the problem is the times are changing. And so the fact that he's a bad man or a depraved man, there are people who say, oh, well, maybe he has the keys to some dark arts in the literature. And so this attempt to bury him backfires.
And he becomes
a goth god.
Yes. What attracted you to Poe as not necessarily a writer, but as a subject to write about?
I had always been interested in Poe and Lincoln going back to childhood. And they are interesting characters to set up to. They're both born in 1809. They're both technically born in the South, or at least raised in the South in Poe's case. And they're both depressives. And so what they do with their depression was enormously interesting to me. Lincoln is somebody who wrestled with the demons of depression and learned to feel other people's pain and then goes on to be this sort of transcendent figure during the Civil War. Poe is a different character altogether. All of the pain he feels, he wants to reinflict on other people.
How easy or difficult is it to find information about Poe?
Well, Poe's much harder than Lincoln.
Well,
yeah.
One would hope.
Yes,
actually.
Yes. The problem with Poe, and people don't exactly appreciate this, is that he's poor. very poor. He's one of the first men of letters to try to make it just on his writing alone, which means, for instance, The Raven, which I would argue is one of the most famous poems that's ever published in America, has earned Poe and his descendants, from the time he wrote it, $9.
Because it was just submitted in that New York paper and done.
And done. So he gets a, and then it's reprinted everywhere, talked about everywhere.
It goes on to
be the name of a football team, and Poe gets $9. So he's incredibly poor, and that people who are poor tend not to leave a footprint. And it was much later that that people said, "Oh, wait, we need to start collecting this guy's stuff." So it's really early 20th century before people are like every scrap or ephemera left over with Poe that they start to pull it together.
But for you as a historian, because if there's only 4 years of his life post Raven until he dies, that's not a lot of time.
Right, and. But I've conceived the book this way in part because I don't know if you've ever seen VH1 Behind the Music.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So every one of these.
This would be a great story for
Yes. Me. Every one of these stories, though, it can drive me crazy because basically the band gets together. There's some hot new genre. They go multi-platinum. And then the drugs and the alcohol sort of take over. And then they descend into madness. And then they go to rehab. And then they start all over.
Right.
And so you're traveling this alcoholic cycle with this group of people, and I just didn't want that for this book because Poe does the same thing. He pulls it together in Richmond, then gets drunk and has to leave. Then he pulls it together in Philadelphia, gets drunk and has to leave, and then same thing in New York. So I just take him on that last alcoholic cycle from 45 to 49, and it's very much a book too about Poe's times and how they see him. As they watch him drink himself to death, what do they think? It's about that, too. And that left a bigger footprint than just Poe.
Jingle Man is in the title of the lecture in the book. That was not a compliment that was bestowed upon him by Ralph Waldo Emerson?
Right. Yes. Emerson is a funny bit of business. He pretended that he didn't know Poe. So when someone said, "Hey, have you read this great new poem, The Raven? It's written by this guy, Edgar Allan Poe," Emerson essentially said, "Who?" And so Poe's name was repeated, and he said, "Ah, you mean the Jingle Man." And he meant that he writes sort of candy popcorn kind of tunes and poetry, but that he isn't a man of letters or anyone that he would deign to respect.
You can see in the 1840s a lot of the sort of literary and book world relationships that we still have now.
Oh, absolutely.
Jealousy.
Yes, yes. And actually, that's one of the things that Poe got into so much trouble for is that he writes The Raven, so he's on top of the world. He can do anything with his fame. And what he should do is what Longfellow did, which is just join up with one of the journals and write exclusively for that journal and make a lot of money. And that's not what he did. He went on a lecture circuit and he said that, you know, our world of literature is fundamentally broken. Poor people can't get ahead. They're not connected enough. Somebody, you know, you write for a major house, and that piece gets puffed forever, and nobody deigns to say anything. And it shouldn't work that way. And people are like, "Well, that's very interesting." And now you've just been locked out of New York literature. So now you're not just poor. You can't feed yourself or your wife who's at home dying of consumption. It's grim going for Poe.
We're just scratching the surface
here.
But you make Edgar Allan Poe sound, at least to some degree, a sympathetic character.
Yeah. He is to a degree, but it's the way he went about things. So, for instance, as he's trying to lecture the literary world in the United States about why they need real criticism, why people need to get a chance, but he's pinning all of this on Longfellow. I mean, he's just tomahawking this guy. Here's the example of what happens when somebody gets raised above their ability. And he seems like a depraved madman, just a monomaniac on the subject of Longfellow's talent. And he's jealous, and he's bitterly jealous, and he's poor, and his wife is dying, and he's an alcoholic, and so he's going about some of the right things, but he's not doing it the right way.
When you research all the different theories about Poe's death, and there are many.
Yes.
So theory might even be a strong word. There
yes.
are many stories
yes.
about his death.
Yes.
One of the suggested causes of death is something called cooping?
Sure.
What the heck is cooping?
Okay, so cooping is a practice in the 19th century where they would get someone, usually the town drunk, and they would say, here, we're going to take you from this voting place and you're going to vote here and we'll give you another drink and we're going to haul you off somewhere else and you're going to vote there. And we're going to keep doing this all night until you pass out. So one theory about Poe's death, it is an election evening. He's found at a tavern that had an election post there. And so one theory is that that's what happened to him. He got grabbed by a bunch of roughs that he may have been drinking with. This is the other thing that people had a problem with. It wasn't just that he was drinking, who he was drinking with. It was very much a class thing. He wasn't home drinking wine with his wife and friends. He was out in the bars with the Bowery Boys and the Tufts drinking. So it's possible. The other bit of evidence is that he's found evidently in somebody else's clothes that evening. So he's not just inebriated, but practically unconscious and in somebody else's clothes and seems to have been roughed up. And so he does leave us with a murder mystery to a degree.
Do you like that as a historian?
I do. I actually like things to be not unknowable, maybe, but because if they were unknowable, you'd just stop investigating. There's just this hope that, you know, somebody will finally crack the case, you know, the ultimate murder mystery left by the father of the detective story. And I would hate for somebody to crack the case. I kind of like the idea that we'll just keep killing him and re-killing him. He's undead, so.
I have read Poe, and I went through, as many people do, I think, in high school, I went through this phase where you read Poe. But I know growing up in north central Arkansas in the Ozarks, Poe's language was very different to me, and I didn't understand a lot that was happening.
Sure.
So it's somewhat surprising that he still remains as popular.
Right.
I know Roger Corman and Vincent Price in the 60s did a great, if they weren't faithful to the stories, they still had those titles. Any idea why Poe? I mean, he is still, name five American poets that ever lived.
Sure.
Almost everyone's going to have him on that list.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. He's actually very accessible. I mean, he's such a... He's a hyper-realistic writer, and he has a great instinct for writing about maelstroms and tornadoes and balloon rides to the moon. And so he's the father of the detective genre, of fantasy, of science fiction, of horror. I mean, he did all of these things first, and he did them in this archetypal way that I think in two paragraphs he's just got you riveted. And that remains, even though the language is to a degree archaic. It's the themes. They're primal. And they go sort of straight, you go straight to terror.
Were many of his works in those 4 years after The Raven was published, before he died, did they become known?
Yeah. So Cask of Amontillado is a very famous one, and it's in 1846. And it's actually written as an act of literary revenge against someone who's outed him in the Temperance Press. So a lot of his famous works, there are layers of meaning in which he's getting back at his enemies. So when he walls this guy up, we just read a story that this is these two men and they have this feud. But in this case, he's actually walling up one of his enemies.
You know, if someone, if and this won't happen, but if there were a Hollywood executive who heard you earlier talking about Lincoln and Poe,
sure.
I mean, we've had Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
You can imagine these young guys. I mean,
yeah. No, absolutely. As far as we know, their paths didn't cross. Someone had Lincoln read send-ups of The Raven and thought that they were all very amusing, but he never read the original. But yes, I would love to throw them together in some kind of mashup with zombies and vampires. I think that would be fabulous.
Is there a difference? You mentioned there was a lot more about Lincoln, and when you wrote about the Todds and Lincoln. Was it a different sort of research that you had to do than when you were researching Poe?
Yes. It's much harder to write true narrative with Poe because you can't give the color and the flavor of things, and you don't know what he's doing all day every day the way we know where Lincoln was every day, especially after he becomes president. I mean, there are blank periods, but not like Poe. Poe disappears for years. Mm. We just have no idea. And he disappears on the day that he died, and we have no idea. And so he leaves these mysteries, and those are enticing, but as somebody who wants to do narrative, it's much harder.
That's got to be, I mean, I know you're a historian, so the struggle sometimes.
It is, absolutely. By the law of history, if you don't have evidence for something, you can't make anything up. So I often say if somebody writes in their diary that they lit a candle, if they don't then write that they blew it out, that candle's still burning, so
somewhere.
Far as I know. I cannot cross that line.
Wow. That seems so restrictive, yet...
I think, you know.
Or perhaps the opposite, maybe.
Yeah, then you get to push the line. I mean, you get to push it as hard as you can. And by having those rules and having to operate within them, then you get to be creative, I think.
And finally, the temperance press, because that was a huge movement.
Huge.
And to be fair, alcoholism was a social problem.
Absolutely.
At the time. Broken homes.
Right.
I mean, sometimes we look at the temperance movement with sort of this.
We do. And it's a huge mistake. The nation went on a bender, basically, between 1790 and 1830. Americans are drinking an exorbitant amount. And we can talk about reasons why. It partly has to do with a lower class is forming, a proletariat is forming, and they're doing jobs that are miserable. They're working jobs they don't like to buy things they don't need. And so they're drinking and going to boxing. And the middle class, too. I mean, they're finally on the business cycle. So the booms are great, but then it overheats and crashes. And yeah, drinking is a real problem, and it leads to things that we don't really think of. It's not drinking as a good time. It's the drinking up of family income. It's spousal abuse and rape. It's child abuse, and you don't have social services that's dealing with any of these things. So it was, yes, a very, very real problem that they had to grapple with. But then Poe becomes sort of a victim because he's not doing any of those things.
Right.
And he's not some demonic presence, but he's an example, and that has to be punished.
And the timeline for the book? Is that a dangerous question to ask?
No, it absolutely isn't. I should be done this year, so we'll see it in 2014.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks very much.
Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun.
Stephen Berry is a professor of history at the University of Georgia, and he delivered the 2013 Donovan Lecture on the University of Arkansas campus last month. That lecture series sponsored by the University of Arkansas's Department of History in the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences. Stephen Berry's upcoming book is titled Jingle Man, The Death and Times of Edgar Allan Poe.